anonymous is hard. And in an athlete's world, you make it anonymous because you want them to feel comfortable. Their gold currency oftentimes is their playing time. It's their financial aid. Perhaps it's their network and career ambitions. They're very reluctant to want to bring things forward because they don't want to jeopardize that. So anonymous gives them that safe and confidential space to be able to do so. But from the organization's perspective, anonymous is sticky, right? Once you find out about it, it's almost like something got thrown over the fence and you have to handle it the right way. And if you don't, you're potentially negligent. So I think for years, you know, organizations were saying, I'd rather not know about it and stick my head in the sand and at least try to deny it down the road if it bubbles up. And we've all seen that doesn't work.
Welcome to another edition of The Cusp Show, the Columbia University Sports Podcast, where we talk about the business of sports, technology, disruption, analytics, media, all different kinds of things. Almost every week, I'm Joe Favorito, along with my co-host, Tom Richardson. Tom, we're at the end of the Olympics for 2021.
Yes. And we got to chat about that in the last show. But as we look at this final weekend, Joe, any further thoughts on top of what we discussed last week in the show with Bo?
Well, I will use the quote that we texted back and forth on this Friday, whatever today is, August 6th. Story in the New York Times about the problems that NBC has had. And from our colleague, Jeff Schell, there was a quote said, "We've had a little bit of bad luck." Which I guess if he was either the captain of the Titanic or running the Olympics for 2021 for NBC, it would play in with understatement on both sides.
Well, I think it's going to be go down as one of the great quotes of media history as we look back on this someday. Yeah, it's been weird. I mean, the issue we talked about last week with the fragmented distribution, the difficulty in discovery, et cetera, they've continued into week two. And I don't think there's much more to say. The ratings are poor. I was asked by our friend Seth Everett in a story he was writing this week. He wanted a quote. He actually was thinking that the biggest problem was the time difference. And I said, well, that's one issue. But I said, the fact of the matter, you got all kinds of issues, different devices, the advertising that is obviously followed through on in the digital environments that just doesn't play as well in digital environments like connected TV or mobile or something like that. So we ended up having a really interesting conversation on that point. I don't think his article's out yet. But this is a topic that's going to be dissected for weeks and months and probably years to come.
Yep. Lots of problems, but we're going to talk about problem solving today in the tech business.
Let's switch the narrative.
And for people who followed us week after week or have dived in from time to time, you know that we like to talk about disruption and looking at issues and figuring out, you know, if there are people usually smarter than Tom or I who come up with solutions. And today we're going to talk about a solution. And I'm going to play a little bit of what if before we get started. So if you think about the problems of sport with athletes in the last few years, what if there was a platform that was safe and secure that an MLB player could have reported someone maybe taking steroids on and been able to point it out before it became a problem? What if probably if there was an Olympic gymnast who was able to safely and securely report an issue with someone like Larry Nassar before USA Gymnastics even knew about it and was able to solve that issue? What if there was an athlete who was having issues with mental health and was close to suicide, and there was somewhere that his roommate or his teammate or her roommate or teammate could report it? What if in the past? Well, the what if has been slowly, partially solved and is growing by our guest today. His name is David Chadwick. He's created a platform called Real Response. It came out of necessity, being a former college athlete, a basketball player, both at Rice and Valparaiso, and he'll talk to you about how that came about. But really, in essence, Real Response, now used by over 100 schools and NGBs like USA Gymnastics, and also most recently the NFL Players Association, is a safe and secure platform where athletes can report issues that they may see, and that universities or national governing bodies or leagues or teams will be able to probably look at things and figure out how to solve problems before they become bigger. So David Chadwick, welcome to the Cusp Show.
Thanks, Joe and Tom. Great to be here.
Cool. Yeah, I'll just say this, Joe, in response to your opening, which I thought was really good. When I learned about real response and started reading up on it, I immediately, in fact, I have a list of questions I jotted down. One of them was use cases, ? And as I started thinking about use cases, my mind got blurry after like 2 minutes because the use cases just kept going and going. You listed, what, three or four? But what's really interesting here is that it applies to so many things that have come under great scrutiny, finally, these last few years. And it feels like it's a moment in time where something like this really makes sense. Anyway, with no further buildup, David, why don't you, I guess, to start, just let everybody know how you conceived of this and got it off the ground.
Sure. I mean, like many entrepreneurs, I started something to solve a direct challenge that I experienced firsthand. I'm a former basketball student athlete. As Joe said, I was blessed to play at two different universities. Started my career at Rice University. I absolutely loved Rice as a university while playing basketball there. During my time, we had some issues and allegations surfaced by some of my teammates around discrimination and abuse. Both sides of the argument had their own side. And, you know, I ultimately chose to leave and transfer up to Valparaiso. That was really my first exposure to some of the more unfortunate things that can happen within a sports environment. But honestly and unknowingly, laid a lot of the seeds for what Real Response has become today. I ended up at Valpo. I had an amazing experience at Valpo. The ironic part was it was a school that I had denied twice, citing all the previous reasons I didn't want to go. Weather, facilities, conference. If you know Valpo, the uniform colors deterred me a little bit too. The things as a naive 17-year-old, I tried to check off my list because I thought I knew at the time what was going to make me happy as a student athlete. But what I learned there is the student athlete experience has very little to do with the externals and everything to do with the intangibles. It's the people, it's the culture, it's the relationships. You know, I joke with people to this day, I would have followed Bryce Drew, who was my coach at Valpo, and his staff to any school in the country. I don't care where they are. Those are the people that I would want to play for. So I was taking a class where I had to come up with an idea originally at Rice. And I wanted to come up with something that would solve the direct challenges again, that I experienced as a student athlete, and mainly the difficulty of providing feedback on experiences, things that are going well, things that could be improved and potentially bring forward concerns that I, or that I heard from many of my peers and friends might have as well. And then equipping the administration again, to see what's going well and what needs attention. A couple of years later at Valpo, I was getting my MBA where I had to come up with another idea. I'm not smart enough to come up with multiple ideas. So I recycled the old one and brought that back and took it to the attention of Mark LaBarbera, who was and still is the athletic director at Valpo, and pitched this to him. And he was the first one that really helped me understand, David, I think a lot of ADs would be interested in having better insight into what's going on within their athletic department. So I began to cold call and cold email athletic directors. There's roughly 325 Division I ADs. I actually interviewed over 200 of them. And the question I asked was, how do you get feedback from your student athletes? What are the challenges you have in that process? That's the really important question you have to ask in entrepreneurship, is figure out what people's problems are and try to solve it. And I collected all that feedback over those months and months of research, and then basically built at the time Real Recruit. We've obviously since rebranded to Real Response, but at the time Real Recruit version 1.0 that solved some of those challenges that I heard from ADs. And then I began to go back to them. So I said, I know I interviewed you several months ago about this specific area. I'd love to show you what this became. And was gracious and thankful enough to have some folks that invited me in to come in and present to their senior staff and showed them the system. And then in that first year had some very prominent schools jump on board. The interesting thing, though, and just continuing to tell this story and how we've got to where we are today, in those early years, student athletes began to use our system, which at the time was just a survey platform, to bring forward really, really concerning things and stuff that in some examples should have come out weeks, months, and occasionally even years earlier. Hazing, NCAA violations, inappropriate relationships between student athletes and coaches, mental health, sexual assault, abuse, misconduct. You mentioned earlier the just number of different things that could fall under this umbrella. And the immediate response from the folks that we were working with was, we can't wait till end of year surveys. We need to have a real-time mechanism for our athletes to be able to approach us at any time with questions, feedback, or concerns that they might have. So that really launched us into where we are today, built out this real-time reporting mechanism, which has now probably become our flagship product. and then continuing to serve these athletic departments in this unique way. So that was really the launch. And I know you mentioned earlier where we are today, but those early years and the research that we did and figuring out what the product needed to be has set a great roadmap for being able to serve this industry during a really timely and important space.
So David, when you talked about building V1, you obviously had to build software, correct?
Correct.
I mean, you had to build a platform.
Yes.
Tell us about that experience, because I don't know if you have a software background or an engineering background, but you must have gotten help to do that. And then obviously, since it's sensitive information, it had to be really well done, carefully done, et cetera. So talk about that.
Yeah, and I'm not an engineer and will never be an engineer. I respect the world out of those people because they're incredibly talented. Early on, partnered with some folks that did have that background as kind of that technical co-founder role. Helped really bring in the feedback that we were hearing from our clients and then building out that early version while utilizing those resources that they had in place and to help develop the product. So yeah, just long winded.
So it was initially primarily like a web interface?
Yeah, we're not a mobile app.
That's
intentional. I'm not naive enough to think we're ever going to beat out Snapchat and TikTok and Instagram for precious storage space. And as Apple continues to change their way of doing things, storage space is precious. But it all is fully web accessible where they can do it on their phone.
Yeah. So it's essentially like a SaaS business, software as a service.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Can you talk about some of your clients, you know, one of which, you know, Tom and I have talked about, our Columbia colleague, John Curry, was a first adopter at Wake Forest. You've had schools, not just big schools, when you hear and you look at the list of Maryland and Baylor and Army and Texas A&M, but Division III schools, you just add in an NAIA school. And you also, as I mentioned at the beginning, have a key NGB that's had some issues in the past at USA Gymnastics, and also the NFL Players Association. So tell us about kind of the breadth and scope of schools and the user experience and what it's been like, especially since you've really kind of upgraded it in the last 18 months.
Sure. You know, for the first four years, we were narrowly focused on college and saw rapid growth. That was our sweet spot. Have served many different types of institutions, big power fives down to D2s, D3s, and then most recently a new NAIA partner. And I tell people that the issues we deal with are not unique to power five schools. These types of things happen at many different types of institutions across the country. And they all have the same needs. So we've been able to partner with these different schools and help them, again, be responsive to student athletes' needs and concerns. And in many instances, I believe, help prevent a crisis. So college is where we were focused. College remains a huge focal point for us as we build out the business and expand our reach in there. You know, honestly, what caused us to begin to expand outside of college was COVID. When COVID hit, I took a step back and I looked at kind of the landscape of our business. And for years, I've always known there was a bigger opportunity for us. But I think COVID forced me to rethink just the business of the health and sustainability. And along that same time, I got synced up with Don Davis at the NFLPA. And Don helped me understand quickly. He said, look, we're trying to prepare for our upcoming season. And let's go back a year ago in the summer. Like, no one had any idea if the NFL was going to play. College football was in a total state of uncertainty. Don said, we're preparing for our new season. We have no idea what's going to happen. We need a way for our players to be able to anonymously come to us amidst COVID. If they have questions, but probably even more pertinent, if there's violations going on. So my teammate Joe is partying and he's not telling anybody, or Joe's symptomatic and he's not telling anybody. How do we hold people accountable? So to hopefully curb this bad behavior. But ultimately, if things are going on, address them as quickly as possible. And again, if you go back to COVID, every hour mattered, right? If someone someone came up positive, the contact tracing and trying to figure out who was in touch with that person and then isolate them, it was just a nightmare. So there was just a huge importance on this. So we were really proud to partner with the NFLPA last year amidst the pandemic season, saw tremendous success with their players. And then more recently, hence the press release, Joe, that you alluded to from last week, they've now expanded our system just beyond COVID. So the players can use it for any health and safety need that they might have and not just narrowed into that one area. And going back to the beginning of our conversation, there's just so many things that face today's athletes that they potentially need help on, and we're going to be really proud to help support them moving forward. So COVID, again, was the beginning of that with the NFLPA. A few months after that, we got synced up with USA Gymnastics and their new leadership, began to talk about a potential partnership and how they were really trying to put new policies and procedures into place so that they could be responsive to their athlete feedback and needs and concerns and what's going well and what could be improved. And they showed it to their broader staff and all their program directors. And the group was just incredibly excited about that partnership. So we were proud to do that with them several months ago. And we've been actively involved with them in Tokyo. They've been using our system to remind the athletes continually about how they have a system in place to be able to come forward if they had feedback and needs related to all the different areas. We got to remember, some of these athletes are minors, right? They're over here in this highly scrutinized period where the Japanese government has a lot of protocols in place. They're separated from their parents and they're isolated, and we've been able to help them again stay connected and communicate, and if needed, people can bring forward concerns as well. So again, NFLPA to USA Gymnastics a few months later, and then we've got several really significant ones we're announcing here within the next couple of weeks, and this is just within 12 months. So I this is a very long answer, Joe, but I think COVID forced us to take a step back and rethink our business model and how we can serve new industries and verticals, and now it's just accelerated significantly as a result of having success with NFLPA and others.
David, in terms of privacy, let's take the NFLPA as an example. The information is feeding into the PA leadership. I imagine they have access to this. It's like a site license for the leadership to look at this software, or, in other words, the information is collected and certain people have access to seeing what's being reported, correct? Perfect.
Yeah, we do not receive it and right. Deal with it. Yep.
So in that case, do they feel compelled to share that with the leadership of the club, which is obviously not in the PA, like the coaches and the business leadership? So I'm thinking of the use case of the Washington football team, where there have been a lot of controversies the last few years. If the PA had it during those difficult, problematic years, would they be compelled is probably not the right word. Would they feel the need to share this with the power brokers that are running the team?
Yeah. I mean, let's take a step back and look at the union's role. The union's role is in the best interest of the players, and that's who they represent. So their interest are on serving the players and the players' health and safety in our example. So the types of things that come through our system are usually related to player health and safety and player needs. Certainly something could have come through. I know with the Washington football team example, that was linked to employees and back office and things alike. So potentially, yes, if it would have come through there related to that, I think it would be then the NFLPA's decision if they wanted to pass that off to the appropriate parties. But, I think the better implementation would be for, in this example, Washington football team to have been a client and have it set up, or perhaps the NFL as a whole and having this set up as a reporting line for the employees at the various clubs.
Is there some sort of system in place to ensure that the data collected and these insights will become actionable ultimately for the organizations? Because one of the themes of these horrible stories we read about, whether it's the gymnastics scandal with Michigan and Nasser, the Penn State situation with Sandusky, was that a lot of leaders knew what was going on and chose not to report it to higher authorities.
Yeah. So let's take a step back again and look at just the challenge with anonymity in general, right? Anonymous is hard. And in an athlete's world, you make it anonymous because you want them to feel comfortable. Their gold currency oftentimes is their playing time. It's their financial aid. Perhaps it's their network and career ambitions. They're very reluctant to want to bring things forward because they don't want to jeopardize that. So anonymous gives them that safe and confidential space to be able to do so. But from the organization's perspective, anonymous is sticky, right? Once you find out about it, it's almost like something got thrown over the fence and you have to handle it the right way. And if you don't, you're potentially negligent. So I think for years, organizations were saying, I'd rather not know about it and stick my head in the sand and at least try to deny it down the road if it bubbles up. And we've all seen that doesn't work. So where our systems become really valuable is it's not just one-way anonymous communications. It's not someone throwing some bombshell issue over the fence and then you having no idea who said it and how to investigate it. with anything that comes in anonymously, you have the ability to carry on further correspondence with that person while as long as he or she so chooses, they can remain anonymous directly where they want to be utilizing their messaging through their cell phone. So it's not some complicated web form they have to log in and remember a username and password. The organization can ask further questions, invite the person to come in and meet, point them in the direction of resources. So on campus, that's commonly, here's how you go meet with our Title IX coordinator to address your Title IX concern. Here's how you go to our mental health specialist. Here's how you go to the sports medicine person or university compliance. And then we've also set up our system so those people can be in the platform as well. So they could just go tag their Title IX coordinator. That person can then respond back to the athlete. And the value is twofold. Number one, they're being responsive, right? And they're gathering information and it's not hitting a roadblock and they're able to help and accelerate their investigation as a result. But number two, our system automatically documents everything with a date and timestamp. They'll build out a full record trail and have that documentation to be able to show, if ever scrutinized, to your point, yeah, we found out about this, but we can show you exactly what we did, who we told, how we followed up, and exactly what happened thereafter, versus in some of these previous examples, like you mentioned, you know the issue happened and you know some people perhaps knew about it, but no record to be able to show what they did thereafter.
Right. And do the ADs typically share any of the information with the administration of these schools?
As in like the president?
Yeah, so think of the Penn State example where a lot of the heads of the university obviously got implicated in the process. So would it be common, let's take the case of Wake and John Curry, like when he's making the deal, and if you can't tell us this, it's cool, but I'm just curious. Would that deal get approved by the administration? Say, hey, that would be a good way to keep tabs on our wrongdoings in our athletic program. Let's pay whatever it costs to do this new real response deal. But as part of that, John, we want to be privy to what you find.
Well, athletic departments, for the most part, take marching orders from campus with these types of things. And I would say, very commonly, there are campus partners in our system that are able to be tagged as a part of follow-up, potentially even be in the initial know as this information comes in. General counsel is a very common role, as you can imagine, Title IX coordinator, dean of students, the folks over student conduct. But what we're seeing more and more is, yes, campus is a part of the decision and then potentially the purchase too, especially at like the D2 and D3 level, where their budgets come directly from campus. They don't have a budget. It's just every year requesting an increase and maybe going straight to the president and saying, can I have an additional amount of X dollars to be able to implement the system? And it's going to help keep us off the front page of the front page of the local paper. So yes.
Talk about objections. You know, you have over 100 partners, but that means that there's probably, at least in the university right now, 500 to 1,000 schools, universities, NGBs that are not yet part of the system. Sure. What are the objections that you get and how do you deal with them?
Price is always an objection and you never know if that's a legit objection or if it's just the easiest excuse, but budgets are tighter after COVID, but you know, we're not a significant line item compared to some of the deals that they're doing with other vendors, but yes, cost is an objection. I would say also an objection sometimes is, okay, do we really want to give student athletes their own confidential reporting line, especially on the campuses, when the rest of the student body might not have it? And a lot of times at campuses, the students have a reporting line to report Title IX, bias, discrimination, et cetera. And the response is, we don't want to give student athletes their own system to be able to report. And we've really begun to overcome that, frankly, by framing real response for athletic specific issues. So this is for reporting athletic specific issues such as, and we all follow college athletics, there's a lot of athletic specific issues, NCAA violations, mishandling of injuries, issues that are happening on the road. We had an example where a coach was texting while driving and almost got in a wreck. Mishandling of injuries can become a huge issue. We've seen several examples recently. I believe Seton Hall men's basketball has one right now where a former player is filing a lawsuit saying their injury wasn't handled appropriately. We've seen issues of verbal and emotional abuse between teams and coaches and culture. So again, framing our system for athletic specific issues, equipping the administration to be responsive to these issues as they surface, while also linking and saying, if you need to report a Title IX concern, click this link. If you need to report bias discrimination, click this link. And I would argue it doesn't conflict the campus system. It complements it and makes it much more accessible for them to know where to go. So cost, existing systems that are in place. And then number three, goes back to what you said earlier, Joe. It's just getting people to the point where they understand of why anonymous, safe, confidential reporting is important. Because I think the challenge is, especially old school ADs think, oh, I'm going to lose the in-person relationship and the connections and my open door policy. And we need kids to, this generation needs to learn how to have difficult conversations and speak up and go to someone in the room and share their opinion. And I think that's all great. And I totally agree with it. But the reality is, there are some issues that people aren't going to bring forward in person, and the relationship is not going to capture it. And having that confidential and safe reporting allows you to be able to be responsive to these things. And frankly, too, I think there's zero tolerance now, right? As these issues continue to happen, there's no excuse now for not knowing about these things. And the people at the top, whether it be the AD or the CEO of these NGBs or whoever, are going to be the ones that are accountable for them happening thereafter.
How are things like red herrings dealt with? You know, some disgruntled athlete or a parent, you know, trying to out a coach for something that didn't happen, or, sure. You know, something that is fictitious or, you know, can hurt recruiting. How are those things handled?
Same way. As I mentioned earlier, you can respond back to the person. So you offer to meet, extend the invitation for the person to pick up the phone and call you. Point them to resources. Do you want to go meet with our general counsel? Do you want to go meet with our Title IX coordinator? You put the burden, and maybe burden's not the right word, but the accountability, the responsibility is the right word, back on that person. And then they have to take action if they want to pursue it further. And if it's a fabricated or fictitious claim, they're not going to do it. I mean, there's nothing to chase from there.
And then how, on the litigious side, because we live in a litigious society, you've had some questions come up of disclosure on cases that become very public, very legal battles. How is that handled in terms of confidentiality, or is it like, you know, client privilege? How does that play out when, you know, some lawyer is knocking on your door, sending an email saying, I need to see all this confidential information?
Yeah. So as I mentioned earlier, you can tag people in the threads. Our system tracks all the metadata. So for example, with the general counsel, you could tag your general counsel. You'd have that log of when that person was added, and they can mark it as privileged. So that does help from that perspective. You know, open records will always be a reality for public universities. You're always going to have attorneys that are trying to subpoena information. You know, what I tell people though is, removing all that conversation, let's just focus on where our system becomes valuable, right? You'd rather know about it than not know about it. So that justifies putting the system in place. But number two, if you're using our system the right way, it's going to show that you're handling it the right way, right? The day and time I found out about this, I told this person, we followed up, we communicated with the anonymous person in this way. Here's all the date and times to justify this. And frankly, here you go, opposing counsel or whoever, like the system's going to show that we're doing this the right way and it's going to protect us.
Mm-hmm. Great.
David, you've got some really impressive testimonials on your site from athletic directors, customers of real response. You've been doing it now for about 6 years. Do you have strong evidence that it's, for lack of a better description, working? Like, are customers happy and renewing? Like, this is a really important new thing in the way they're managing their athletics?
Yeah, we have great renewal rates. We have great upsell rates where we take new products to our clients and they want to add them on. I mean, just to give you some specific examples, like we have one that a former athletic director speaks to pretty candidly, where a student athlete used our system to anonymously share that one of their teammates was considering suicide. And the institution was immediately able to cover that person and resources, connect them to different individuals. And he tells me to this day, I think we might have prevented what otherwise could have been a crisis. We've had examples where partners have been able to avoid litigation. So this hits the news, I feel like, every week. But an allegation of abuse or whatever comes out by an athlete, and the institution or organization has been able to use our system in the conversations with the opposing counsel and say, we have a formal process for our athletes to bring forward their needs and concerns. This individual never chose to bring this issue forward. In these examples, the opposing counsel has actually recommended not to move forward with litigation. So saving this school or institution or organization, whoever, tons of money related to legal fees and the investigation or anything thereafter. We've had institutions identify serious verbal and emotional abuse and toxic culture problems within their programs. We saw an issue where a coach was giving cash to recruits when they were on campus. That was an obvious violation of the NCAA rules. I mentioned the one earlier where a coach was texting while driving. I could go down the list. I mean, there's been so many examples.
Feels like this would be helpful in high school sports and advanced youth, competitive youth sports like AAU and things like that. Is that on the docket?
Yeah, we're evaluating it. As we have these conversations with the national governing bodies, they're looking at not only, okay, how can this be used with our national and Olympic team athletes, but promoting this service to our club organizations as well and membership. I think the challenge there is just with where we are now with elite athletics, a college athlete, an NFL player, there's obviously a clear tie to the investment that's being put into that person, right? Whether it be their salary, their scholarship, NIL is changing all that now. So I think there's definitely an element of perhaps more, I don't mean to put this dismissive towards the high school or youth clubs. I think more responsibility for the value of that person and their needs and concerns, but certainly, yes. I mean, there are many, many issues that are going on at that level now that our system could provide assistance to.
And the last question from me, and we'll get to our two questions, and I'm sure Tom has one more, but flipping it around, have you seen schools start to use this as a recruiting tool for parents looking at this saying, you know, how am I going to know if my son or daughter is protected and will be in a safe environment? Have you schools come back to you and said, you know, we've got a real response, Mark, this is what we do to make sure that you understand that your kids are being protected?
Yeah. And we're now seeing institutions, and we haven't done this for years past. We really just started in the last 12 months wanting to do press releases. So wanting to do a joint press release where they can highlight and amplify what they're doing. We've got one on our website from a few days ago where Janet Cohn, the athletic director at UNC Asheville, recorded a video and spoke to why she's implementing Real Response, what the goals are, how it's going to be utilized. And then UNC Asheville is putting it out on their Twitter, and the different programs are retweeting it and getting it out to those recruits that are watching it. So absolutely. I mean, this is becoming an asset that for these young men and women, when they're on campus and their parents, to be able to see your kid's going to be covered from the in-person relationships as a coach and as our staff. But if there's ever something else they need help with and they need a confidential way to be able to reach the administration, here's a way they can do it through Real Response.
Cool.
All right, I've got one more, Joe. We mentioned NIL, and I just want to ask specifically about what that means for Real Response and how you build this out, because obviously this all just hit the summer a month ago.
Yeah.
We've heard the stories, the anecdotes floating around the industry already of the craziness that ensued. Did you actually go in and either add to or modify software to reflect some of the potential issues around NIL?
Yeah, we're seeing our clients do it and just kind of adding it to the list of the types of concerns that people could use our system for. I think it's going to be a couple of waves. I think the first wave was the wave of unknown. I had a partner tell me, I feel like I'm in the middle of a field right now. And he's at a major university over their compliance staff. And he said, I know a tornado is coming, but I don't know from which direction. I don't know if it's going to be close to me. I don't know how big it's going to be. So I think the first wave was just kind of the unknown of, okay, NIL is here. What does it mean? But I think once we figure that out, the second wave is going to be, okay, what do violations look like, right? Because there's inevitably going to be bad behavior as this gets going.
I'm shocked that you'd say that. I'm shocked.
No, right? There's never bad behavior. So, you know, our system will be positioned to help these institutions find out if there is inappropriate activity going on behind the scenes, people not disclosing deals, everything that you can imagine. But then our platform also has a really good documentation system where they can log the meetings, the conversations, the notes that they're having around these types of issues too. Because again, you want to be able to show not only we found out about it, but here's everything that was going on alongside it as well. So I don't think we're in the weeds that some of these other vendors are from like a deal disclosure and things like that. But I know our time's coming, as inevitably it will with the bad.
Well, it seems like you're in a really good position on that particular issue since the NCAA decided to punt on it entirely in terms of monitoring, right?
Yeah, punts plural. They'll probably keep punting.
Right. Yes. Ongoing punting. Right. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, man, that's really interesting. Congrats on all the success.
Thank you. And I mean this, and I think any entrepreneur would tell you this. Certainly we had success and proud of what we've done, but in a lot of these examples, it's being in the right place in the right time. And if you want to call it luck or divine sovereignty or whatever, we were in the right neighborhood and not yet on the right street. But as this began to become a focus of athletes utilizing their voice and speaking to injustice and issues and mental health. I mean, the Olympics, with what Michael Phelps is doing right now, and Simone Biles, it's raising awareness to the athlete feedback and issues unlike ever before. And again, we were already doing this, and we're going to continue to do this, and it's our mission. So we've been really proud to now take this and run with the movement and what's going on, and continue to adjust this moving forward.
So David, our last two questions that we'd like to ask, because we have a lot of young people or people transitioning in careers or entrepreneurs who listen to the podcast. What's the advice, other than I love right neighborhood, trying to find the right street, the advice you give to young people or people looking to reinvent themselves as a career? And then the other thing is, you guys touch on so many areas. How do you stay up to date and constant with all the news that's going on, you know, that could affect your business?
Yeah. So the first advice I'd give to young folks, and I did this, but I think I did it a little bit unknowingly, leverage not necessarily being a professional that's asking for something yet. So at the time, I was a Valpo student athlete, and I was able to reach out to John Curry and Greg Byrne and Scott Strickland and all these different folks and just be completely honest with them and say, I'm a basketball student athlete. I'm doing a class project right now. Would you be willing to speak with me for 15 minutes about what I'm working on and provide me some feedback? If I would have emailed those three and said, I'm selling a software that I'd like to pitch you on, would you give me a call back? Probably most of them wouldn't. So
good point.
Yeah. When you're going to these people, leverage just saying, I'm young, I'm hungry. You were once in my place. I'd love to connect with you and pick your brain on what I'm working on. Many people will take your call. But then after that, I'm a big believer in just tenacity and determination, and you have to find a way to separate yourself against the fold. And, you know, our team has worked so hard over the last 5 years, showing up to every conference where we knew people would be at. I mean, countless examples where, I won't use a name, but ADs that were willing to take my call. And I said to them, oh, by the way, I'm going to come meet with you in person. Little did they know I was hopping on a plane and I was going to fly out there to meet with them in person, because I knew that relationship was going to be so strong for long-term success and sustainability. So find ways to separate yourself. And if it means getting in the car and driving 6 hours, or getting on a plane and flying to meet with someone, and I've done that for many, many years now, and it's compounded, that's the ultimate separation that I think achieves long-term success.
And before you go to the second question, just so everybody understands, David is of the ripe old age of 31. So it's not like, you know, he is in the boat or in the general area of most of our students, maybe a little bit older, Tom, just slightly older.
So yeah, no, but that's really solid advice. Good for you.
Yeah. And then how do you stay up to date with everything going on?
Yeah, we're really in tune with the various media outlets. I mean, on college, I think D1 Ticker and College AD do a really good job of syndicating everything that happened throughout the day. I've got a really good memory of all the issues that are going on with the various universities across the country. So I could name off probably the last 10 off the top of my head. So that helps me just kind of have my radar on, okay, what types of issues are now bubbling up at these various institutions? How can we then translate that to our current partners and make sure that they're addressing these areas? And then honestly, it's just staying in contact with our clients. I mean, it's not unusual for me to text or call one of my friends and just say, hey, how are you doing? Is there anything that we can do for you? I'd love to catch up. And just that touch point is oftentimes a way to just gather feedback and stay in tune with what's going on.
Yep. And then lastly, you are hiring. And you are looking at other opportunities, or there may be some people listening who want to find out more about Real Response. How do they find you, and how do they find out more about Real Response?
Well, I'll give you the easiest way. David.Chadwick@realresponse.com is my email. So you are more than willing to email me. And Joe, going back to your earlier question of how do I separate myself? I was the person that was emailing folks, and I didn't send them one email, and I might regret saying this when I have a huge inbox here in the coming weeks, but I emailed them twice. I emailed them three times. I emailed them four times. And then I go to their administrative assistant and say, I've been trying to get in touch with this person. Do you think they talked to me? So there's definitely a determination piece that separates folks there, but that's my email. And then if you go to our website, we have a contact form. We have a chat bubble at the bottom right that allows you to directly message our team with questions and comments, et cetera. So that's probably the easiest way.
And the URL is Real Response, right?
RealResponse.com. Correct.
Yes. Okay,
cool.
Wow, that's a good answer. Giving someone giving their email, Joe, that's bold.
I would say, Tom, in 5 years, we've maybe had three people.
Maximum respect. Our producer, Taylor, just like gave us the thumbs up. Like, I think you're going to get at least one from Taylor. He's been listening to us. But that really is nice of you to do that. And I agree with you, by the way. I always use to go back to the classic line, fortune favors the bold. And sometimes being bold just means reaching out when you're a little bit scared to reach out. As I often say to people, what's the worst that can happen? They won't return your email.
Yeah.
That's such a bad thing.
And you got to learn. I mean, I'm taking a class that starts next week on how to become a better writer. And I think writing is so key. And the first class is going to be cold emailing and just how do I formulate a really good cold email to someone that I don't know and the right length and the right tone. And all that's connected with trying to achieve a success. And this person's position is cold emails have changed my life. I can directly to link all these different successes that I've had to a really good email that I sent someone that opened a door. So,
yeah. And by the way, and related to that, and I've said this to people I've given some advice to, if it's a really important email and it's only a few sentences, if that takes you 45 minutes or an hour, that's a great investment of your time.
Easily. I mean, I've spent hours just going back and forth on an email and then sleeping on it and coming back. Mm-hmm.
You got to figure out how to be economical, on message, polite, but tenacious. I mean, it's an art and it takes a lot of practice to write good emails like that.
And I've had times where someone's emailed me back and my wife's like, what the heck are you doing? And I'm like, this person just emailed me back and I know they're at their computer and they're looking at their email. So I need to respond back to them this very second. I'm dropping everything to do so. So, but I'm very joking. I'm very analytical. I probably overthink things, but yes.
That's great. Good for you.
Tom, you want to wrap us up?
Yeah, boy. Well, thank you to David Chadwick of Real Response. What a fascinating topic. What a fascinating business. And what a great story for you personally, David. Thank you for sharing it with everybody. Really impressive.
I appreciate it. Appreciate all you guys are doing for the future of the sports business world. And it was an honor to be here today.
Our pleasure. So we urge everybody to check out Real Response. That's realresponse.com. You can email David, most importantly, as a next step of this podcast. That's a great offer. And anybody looking around, take David's advice, go for it. But make sure it's a good email, not a quick email. Put some time aside and write something smart to David. Thank you, Joe. Great. I'm glad you introduced us to David. It was great to have him. Thank you, Taylor, for producing as always. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'll say this again. We say it every so often. If any listeners would like to recommend any specific guests, topics, issues, whatever, Joe and I are all ears and talk about being accessible. Joe, it's easy to find both of us, especially on Twitter. So don't hesitate to reach out. We're really happy to get some feedback and get some ideas. So feel free to do that. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see everybody next time on the show.
Thank you, guys.